You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And whether you are coming, you're joining us live on your radio dial, or you're streaming live from 3cr.org.au, or you're listening back to the podcast that will be uploaded later today, whoever you are, thank you for joining us today. And you're joined today by myself, Jacob Antwerfer, who's going to be one of your presenters today. And then I'm happy to introduce my co-presenter, Stephanie.
Hello, good morning, everyone. And before we go any further on this beautiful morning, Friday, 3rd of October, we'd just like to acknowledge that the land that we're broadcasting from today is the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. The original, the rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land, Australia was founded on genocide and dispossession of the first people, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the first peoples of the world in their struggle for justice and right to land.
Okay, so we have quite a packed program today. I mean, probably a lot of our listeners have been following the news around the Freedom Flotilla for Gaza, which is attempting to kind of deliver life-saving aid to Gaza. And it's very much been led by a lot of different kind of activists and volunteers from all over the world. We'll have a bit of a discussion about that, because I think that is kind of like one of the main sort of headline news stories that we want to kind of discuss at the start of the program. But just to let listeners know what we have coming up in the program, we're going to be talking to Angela Carr, who is an ASU delegate, who's going to be we're going to be having a discussion with her about, you know, the proposed kind of cuts to community services sort of wages. That's kind of like a big kind of industrial issue that's happening right now. Yeah. We're going to be speaking to Massimo, who is actually the president of a progressive Italian sort of left-wing sort of group known as Felif, to kind of discuss the Palestine solidarity movement in Italy. Yep. Probably some of our listeners, probably who were listening to our program yesterday, we did had a bit of a discussion about, you know, the quite incredible kind of general strike that happened in Italy over the past week. And in fact, there's more strikes to kind of come. Then we're going to be speaking to Palestinian activist May Saif, giving a bit of response to Trump's peace deal in Gaza, which I think is going to be another big topic of discussion on our program. Just think there's quite a lot to kind of unpack, I guess, in terms of this program. So I guess it kind of we'll guess I'll start off a bit of a kind of discussion about the Gaza flotilla. So just to give a bit of an update on the actual flotilla itself, probably most of our listeners are probably aware that there's at least 42 vessels, like 42 ships that have attempted to break the siege on Gaza. At this point, pretty much every vessel, I think, looking at the flotilla tracker online, which can be found on the Global Sumud Flotilla website, which is globalsumudflotilla.org, has been intercepted by Israel. And basically, I mean, the kind of reports that I've been kind of hearing, I mean, the most fortunate news is that no one has died. No one has been shot by Israeli kind of forces. The majority of people who have been essentially detained and, well, I would use the term kidnapped by yes. by the Israeli forces have essentially been just deported back to Europe. Or like Greta Thunberg, for example, who was one of the main people, one of the main activists who was on one of the flotillas, has already been deported back to Europe. We don't know about some of the other people who have been detained at this point, but we are aware that there were at least six Australians who are on the flotilla, which actually included an MUA member. So the Maritime Union have actually been one of the main unions that have actually condemned Israel's interception of the Global Sunward flotilla, attempting to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza, and essentially called on Australia to take action against Israel's breach of law. So essentially six Australians have been detained 70 kilometres from the Gaza coastline. Their names are Sarah McEwen, Abu Bakir Rakia, Hamish Patterson, Juliet Lamont, Bianca Webb-Pullman and Dan Carwood. So they've all essentially been illegally abducted from their vessels and are in Israeli custody. And of course, the family is obviously extremely concerned, as reported in Green Left, that more than 280 aid workers have been killed by Israeli Defence Forces since October 7, 2023. So that's basically the kind of latest in terms of where the Gaza flotilla is at. I mean, what has been quite incredible has been the kind of outpouring of sort of general of international solidarity for sort of all over the world.
Yeah.
So there's been massive protests in Greece. There's been quite a lot of protests in France, Italy. And we've also seen at least two protests in Australia, and there'll be more protests happening tonight in Mianjin, in Brisbane, and Sydney, and Western Australia. And I think probably another thing to kind of note has been a bit of the kind of international kind of response. So there is a bit of conflicting kind of things happening in terms of how the governments have kind of responded. So, you know, there has been some promises from different governments to, you know, send ships to kind of defend the kind of flotilla. But some of that has been sort of done in a very kind of half-hearted way. So, for example, Spain, which, you know, is one of the few countries that has, you know, taken a degree of action against Israel for its genocide in Gaza. But, you know, one of their kind of statements that they sort of made was basically encouraging people, oh, can you please not go on the foot on, like, they're basically encouraging people not to attempt to break the siege. Then there was, like, you know, the Italian government, you know, which is by quite a right wing kind of government, has sort of basically made the line that, you know, you shouldn't do, you know, people shouldn't try to break the border because, you know, it's not good for the Palestinians and you're likely endangering your own lives. So that has been some of the different kind of responses. And of course there has been the Turkish president has condemned Israel, although they're also quite a right-wing government. And then Gustavo Petro, who is the Colombian president, has probably made the strongest kind of political statements in support of the Freedom Flotilla. Yeah. And in fact, one of his actions that he has kind of done has been he's expelled all Israeli diplomats from the country, and he's very much severed all internet relations with Israel. There's only like four diplomats that remain posted in the country. And then, of course, Brazil has made, you know, quite a strong condemnation, especially since there are a number of Brazilians who are on the Freedom Flotilla. So, yeah, that's a bit of just a bit of a summary. And actually, Steph, do you have any sort of extra comments you want
to add? Yeah, I've actually just referring here to a press release from the Global Samud Flotilla itself from, well, it's got yesterday's date, but I guess like we're in a different time zone, hey. But yeah, just to add some more detail around that, like the, yeah, I'm going to use the word abduction as well, because, and it sounds like they'll, yeah, it was a very aggressive act on Israel's part. So the, yeah, the civilians on board carrying food, baby formula, medicine and volunteers from 47 different countries. And there's, this includes doctors and aid workers and just, yeah, it's a real coalition of people who are, yeah, really coming together to break the siege and deliver life-saving aid. They are unarmed. So when they were intercepted, they were assaulted with water cannons, doused with skunk water, and had their communication systems jammed up in, yeah, very deliberately. So there's also several boats were reportedly stopped by a chain-like barrier in international waters where Israel has no jurisdiction, just as they have no jurisdiction over Gaza's waters and shoreline. And then the lawyers who are supporting the flotilla participants have been given minimal updates and have not been informed on whether the estimated 443 flotilla volunteers who were forcibly taken from their vessels will arrive at Ashdod, where they're expected to be processed under illegal detention. It's an unlawful abduction in direct violation of international law and basic human rights. Intercepting humanitarian vessels in international waters is a war crime. Denying legal counsel and concealing the fate of those seized compounds the crime. So, yeah, it's not looking good. However, the other thing that's standing out here as well, Jacob, is that not all the vessels have actually been seized. So they've actually lost, yeah, there's communication has been lost with some of the vessels actually. So Makino sailing under the French flag may have entered Palestinian territorial waters, according to AIS data, but remains out of contact. And Marinette sailing under the Polish flag is still connected via Starlink and communication, carrying a total of 6 passengers on board. So, yeah, our thoughts and hopes are with everyone who is involved with the flotilla. And, yeah, it's a pretty gross violation of human rights and just, it's just low, denying aid to starving children and innocent civilians is low.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just to add here as well is because I've just been reading on some of the latest kind of responses, especially looking at the Albanese government's kind of response. So
they have responded, have they?
There hasn't been any real comment really from Albanese or Penny Wong. But Australia's Assistant Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade basically responded that he was deeply concerned about the risks to the safety of passengers on board they basically kind of made a bit of a both sides statement, basically saying Australia calls on all parties to respect international law and international humanitarian law and to refrain from any unlawful or violent act against the flotilla, he said in basically a statement.
Right.
So that is essentially kind of the statement. But I mean, I think that for the Palestine movement, you know, what we're actually really demanding from our governments is we would demand that any kind of government would actually put serious pressure on the Israeli government, apply all diplomatic and economic pressure to essentially to stop Israel from intercepting these ships. That would be one thing.
Yeah.
We would also, in most cases, I mean, Israel's not going to concede to that. So in the second instance, we would also be demanding that, you know, similar to what I think some other countries have done, actually would send vessels to also support these countries making a safe passage into Gaza. That would be the type of kind of international kind of pressure that we would want to kind of apply in the case of this freedom flotilla. And But I think, you know, I think, you know, most governments really have done really the bare kind of minimum in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, the Australian government's response is pretty much in line with their previous responses, which is very much a total kind of inaction in the face of the genocide.
Yep. Absolutely. No surprises there.
And also at the other end of the day, I mean, the Australian government is still engaging in two way arms trade with Israel. It is supporting the neo-colonial kind of takeover of Gaza that's been proposed by Trump that we're going to be discussing later in our program with Palestinian activist May Saif. And yeah, ultimately, I think, you know, we have to keep protesting for Palestine. Mm. I think it's going to be very important to show up to the Palestine protests this Sunday, but also the following week for the nationwide protests.
But also, I'd encourage all listeners just to not stop spamming their ministers. Like, seriously, email them, send them letters, go and meet with them in person, put every kind of pressure on MPs and anyone with influence to support the flotilla and demand justice and the respect of human rights and international law for the Palestinians and for the Freedom Flotilla. Label some wood flotilla.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, at 3CR, I mean, it goes without saying that we stand in full solidarity with the people, you know, the brave people who are who are volunteering as part of the.
How good is Greta? Greta's just going back for, like, she's such an inspiring young person absolutely support everyone who's involved on the flotilla.
And I think it's just an incredible, it's just an incredible individual act to put, especially since the level of kind of danger that would be involved just going out at sea in a very dangerous sort of territory. I mean, there's everything that, you know, there's every risk that Israel could just simply bomb your ship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Full solidarity with the people on the flotilla right now. Yeah, we hope they can all, well, given that a lot of them have been detained, kidnapped and abducted by the Israeli forces, we can hope that everyone has safe passage back home.
And should we go to a song now, Jacob?
I'll just go play a quick announcement and we'll go on to the first song. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources. And we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our land.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our land back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, and we just had a bit of a headline news discussion about the Freedom Flotilla that has been attempting to break Israel's siege and deliver life-saving aid to Gaza. Now, we're going to go, we thought it would be a good time before our first live interview to play a song, and so we're going to play Roll On by The Living End.
Yeah, I chose this song because of what Ange and us will be talking about together. So it is, of course, about, the Labor movement, but in particular a certain strike that took place for the dock workers. Enjoy.
One, two, three, four!
Hold on, passed when the union made it clear. Spirit slowly faded and the end was getting near. You see, you're all expendable, and when all is said and done, you'll go back to work tomorrow, meet your new replacement son.
And welcome back to Green Left Radio on 8:55 a.m. 3CR, and that was A Living End, Roll On, and what an iconic Australian rock song that is. And we're about to start an interview with Ange Carr. Now, Ange is an ASU delegate. She is a Socialist Alliance member, and she's worked in the community services sector for 20 years in a range of different services, and she currently works in family violence. And good morning. It's so good to have you on the show.
Good morning.
How are you this fine morning?
Good, thanks, and good morning to the listeners as well.
Yeah. Now, and it's lovely to talk to you. However, I'm also quite angry. Are you a bit angry as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so... are you able to just explain for anyone who's not kind of aware of what's happening, what are the proposed changes and which workers would this affect? What's happening?
Yeah, so basically the Fair Work Commission is proposing huge changes to the Social, Community, Home Care and Disability Services Award, so the SHADS Award.
Mm.
So in April this year, they released a decision that workers that are employed under our SHADS, along with those working under other awards in feminised industries. And they're all industries that receive rates of pay that have been affected by gender-based under-evaluation. So as part of its decision, the panel provided a provisional classification structure for the SHADS award, and this is intended to remedy the under-evaluation and promote gender pay equity, but as I'll go on to explain, that's really not the case. So the Commission has also outlined its provisional view that the Equal Remuneration Order, or ERO, would no longer be required and it should be revoked. So this is going to impact people working in jobs such as First Nations services, disability, homelessness, family violence, family services, basically the whole plethora of operations under the banner of social work.
Mm.
And the changes to the award, they're going to cut pay for up to 74% of workers in the sector.
Oh, my goodness.
And they would scrap our current pay structure and remove the ERO, which we fought hard to win in 2012.
Mm.
And what I think is particularly concerning is the way in which the pay brackets will be classified with under the qualification system, with no consideration given to lived experience or long-standing industry experience that workers hold. So I can give you a good example that relates to myself. So someone like myself that holds diploma qualifications, 20 years in the industry, and I came into the sector with a lived experience of disadvantage, we would not be entitled to be paid at the same rate as someone that holds university qualifications.
Mm.
And in the social work sector, there's a large portion of workers that fall into this category. And I understand that qualifications are important, but university doesn't prepare people for the reality of social work. And the barriers to lived experience staff moving up the pay bracket or into higher roles is going to further leave people at a financial disadvantage. So it's huge changes that are being proposed.
And that's just, I mean, it's also, I hope this is okay to say, but I personally feel like it's really anti-woman. Like, it's actually quite misogynistic to, like, why are they not reviewing other, why are they singling out community services to have these this review of pay? Like, it's just, yeah, it's gross. And it doesn't respect, yeah, the wealth of experience that so many people have who work in community services. And that expertise is so invaluable, isn't it, Ange? Like, it's just, again, women's, like, predominantly women's work and feminized sectors are yet again undervalued and yeah, denied 100%. Equal pay. Yeah. And is it okay as well, just with the equal pay campaign that occurred, well, quite a few years ago now, can you just sort of explain what that was about and what that achieved? Because the proposed new changes really undermine those really hard-won rights and improvements.
Yeah, so back in 2010, the Australian Services Union, or the ASU, our union led a groundbreaking campaign to ensure equal pay for workers in our sector, which is a feminised industry. 90% of people in the sector are women.
Mm.
And so the equal pay campaign was a really important step to bring up our wages to a livable standard and more in line with the wages of male-dominated industries.
Yeah.
So the Equal Remuneration Order campaign, or the Equal Pay campaign, it was won in 2012. Mm. And so from 2012 through to 2020, we received incremental pay rises each year, which won workers a 40% pay rise, leading to the wages that we have today.
Mm.
So sort of the impacts of the changes, I mean, the ASU and other people have done reports around this. But the Cordis report estimated the impact of the provisional classification structure has concluded that if the new structure was applied today, about 73% of people would lose pay, 46% would lose over $200 a week, and shockingly, about 11% of workers could lose over $500 a week. And so the impact is particularly severe in positions focusing on financial support, emergency relief, family violence, and the community legal position.
Oh, yeah.
So around 75% of the positions are held by women, compared to 62% of those held by men.
Mm.
And the rates don't reflect the ERO order rate. And the rates that were set for each classification above level one are lower than those provided for by the ERO pay point. So it's, you know, this is a really concerning change.
Absolutely. And just like thinking about, the impacts of poverty on women, but also like non-binary and gender diverse people as well are also more likely to work in the community services sector too. And it's just like basically condemning thousands of people to poverty wages.
Absolutely.
And like so many people, if this takes place, I mean, it's already really difficult work to do. And like that, the toll of vicarious trauma, the emotional toll that's required, and just the, like, I mean, this sector is rife for unpaid overtime as well. Like, there's so many issues that we could talk about here, but
definitely,
this is such a slap in the face. And, like, I mean, the risk is that they could lose so many people who just won't be able to afford to work in this sector, especially, you know, in the current financial crisis that we're experiencing. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah.
So can you just tell us a little bit, Ange, about the ASU campaign? And, I think there might be an upcoming rally. Is that right?
Yeah, there is. So there's a national day of action and rallies planned across the country. So for people that are in NAM, our rally is on Thursday, the 23rd of October at the State Library, and that's at 12 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're basically rallying to demand no cuts to our pay, protection of equal pay, and the fair recognition of our work.
Mm.
But I'd also encourage people to jump on the ASU's website and social media platforms to follow what's happening. There is a petition floating around that people can sign. And if people want to have a deep dive into the detail of this issue, the ASU webpage has all the reports and documents up there. So please follow that.
Yeah, thanks, Ange. And I think, like, as well, it might be good if we check in again with you, perhaps on radio, we can have a little update. Yeah, maybe after the rally. But, yeah, look, solidarity to you and to all the workers who might be impacted by this, and also to all allies as well. Like, it's so important that we fight this. This is absurd. Like, we've got the government just pouring billions of dollars into warfare, basically. And then, yeah, trying to cut wages of people who are, you know, only just really caught up to a livable wage. And even then, it's at the moment, it's like, it's still pretty challenging, isn't it? So it's just disgusting. Yeah. Any final comments that you'd like to make?
Yeah, probably touching on some of the points that you made, because these proposed changes are a significant attack on women and workers. And over the last decade, there's been a massive decrease in job security in our sector. So, you know, 5-10 years ago, jobs used to be permanent, but now predominantly they're just six-term contracts. So we see workers bouncing from job to job. You know, people are unable to take out home loans, meet their bill payments. And the cuts to pay is an absolute insult to workers who are already doing it tough in an industry that's underfunded, we're overworked, and we're operating in a social environment that's increasingly complex. And our industry's not easy, so vicarious trauma, like you mentioned, and burnout are like a very real situation for workers. And because we come into the sector because we care and we want to make a difference. But it's just increasingly difficult. And when we hear messaging from the government about dismantling violence against women and improving our social and economic status, you know, these sorts of changes pushing us into poverty, you know, absolutely fly in the face of that. So
We
know that workers are going backwards at the moment. So we just, I'd really just like to encourage everyone to get around the campaign. Join your union. Unions are still one of the largest bodies that can organise mass mobilisations. And we really need everyone to get around us to fight back against this appalling attack on our wages and our rights.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about supporting the workers who are supporting the most vulnerable people, which, you know, our government really refuses to take care of properly. So it's just so important that we, that we stand with community service workers. You all do an amazing job, and I'm so sorry that you're not valued and seen for all the hard work that you do. But, like, we, you know, Jacob and I and everyone listening to Green Left Radio this morning, you know, we see that and we acknowledge that and we thank you. And, yes, we'll fight alongside you. And have a fabulous day. It's been lovely talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Ange, for being on our program.
Yeah, have a good one. Thanks, everyone.
See you.
Bye.
So we're just speaking to Ange Carr, who is an ASU delegate, about kind of like the kind of outrageous sort of weakening of kind of wages, especially for women in the community sector. So yeah, I'll just go play a quick announcement. Maybe we can just play a quick song before before the next interview. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Okay, so we're going to have another live interview shortly. So I thought we'll play play one of my favourite tracks. It's by a Japanese reggae singer, Minmi, and the song is called Who's Fiend. Okay, you were just listening to Who's Theme by Japanese reggae artist Minni. I'll just pass it on to Steph to introduce our second live interview for the program.
Yeah, so you're listening to the Green Left Radio Show on 3CR 855 AM. With us joining us today is Massimo, who is president of FILIF, which is a Federation of Italian Migrant Workers and Their Families. Massimo also runs a bilingual show on 3CR, actually, called Radio FILIF every Wednesday, 6:30 till 7:30 p.m. And this gives an important voice to radical and alternative views from the Italian community, both locally in Italy and internationally. So we're mainly today going to be talking about the inspiring action by Italy's union movement in support of the Global Samud Flotilla. So welcome to the studio, Massimo.
Hello.
Hello. Morning. Are you able to just tell us briefly about FILIF?
Surely. So FILIF is the Federation of Italian Migrant Workers and Their Families. It was established in the 70s all over the world for the Italian diaspora and had historical ties with the Italian Communist Party and the biggest union, the CGL. In Melbourne specifically, he died out in the 90s and there was not FILIF here. And then a few years ago, with some old comrades and some of the newer Italians, we decided to get it back up. And we are mainly a community group. We organize in the Italian diaspora, different generations of Italians, and we try to bring a critical political voice in the Italian community, which has gone a bit quiet and a bit institutionalized. Mm. And we have a radio show where we try to explain a little bit what's going on in Italy with some links to what's happening here. It's in Italian and English, so try to bridge the different generations.
Yeah, so Massimo, this is Jacob here, one of the other co-presenters. I want to kind of ask about, you know, especially for our listeners that missed this kind of really historical kind of event, can you tell us about the general strike that happened in Italy on the 27th of September? You mentioned kind of one of the large Confederate unions joined the general strike.
Yeah, so the biggest union actually didn't join the first general strike, but they endorsed the one that is going to happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow for Italy, so yeah, it's going to be Friday there. on the day of the general strike, something historical happened. The strike was called by the USB, which is a base union. It's a grassroots rank and file run union, and backed by Potere al Popolo, which is a smaller party on the left that it's growing. And the strike was in response to the inactivity and the complicity of the Italian government with the genocide. It was pushed mainly by, at least at the beginning, by the dock workers in Genova, which they've been blocking weapon shipments for years prior to the general strike, so this is not new for them. But they were really able to create an emotional connection with the Sumut Flotilla. There was a lot of work that happened before the strike to really get the people around this mission. And on the general strike was historical in the sense that workers and students united really shut down the country. So the way that it was run was amazing in the sense that there was a lot of independence that was given to each action all over the country, but there was one simple message and one simple goal, which was to block everything. So just get together and actually try and stop the economy of the genocide. Mm-hmm. And it was historical in the sense because the country was shut down for 24 hours, effectively.
Yeah, wow, that's just so inspiring to hear. And was it tens of thousands that that were involved in the different strikes?
Well, there's different numbers, but we go from 500,000 to 800,000.
Wow, that's just incredible. Yeah. And just for, because I wasn't aware of this actually, Massimo, until you told me yesterday, and it was very useful information to know. But if you're just able to sort of explain how unions work in Italy, because it's a little bit different to Australia, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So here we got trade unions, so in a sense that perhaps the unions here are more linked to your profession, and we got so many different unions. And in Italy, it's different in the sense that unions are more political. So depends on your political affiliation, not party affiliation, just like, you know, if you're on the left or more on the center, you have a union. And the main difference in the unions in Italy, it's that we got the what we call the big three, historical confederated unions. CGL, CISL, and WIL, and CGL always been the biggest one. And then we got what we call like base unions. So these are unions that are run from the bottom. It's not like a more of like a hierarchy of like more of a bureaucratic trade union, the ones that maybe we have here. And they grassroots rank and file led. The unions that 90% of the cases organize is also migrant workers or undocumented workers. And the main difference is the fact that these unions don't have the same structure. And until the general strike, the power balance we thought was all on the big Confederate side in terms of numbers. But this general strike, this latest general strike showed us that this grassroots rank and file union actually grew a lot. And they were able also to organize outside workplaces in the sense that they've been calling a strike that then has been followed by students, by the civil society. So I think it was historical in the sense too, because now the big confederated unions have to go and speak with the rank and file grassroots ones. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the new general strike that is going to happen tomorrow, the CGL, which is the biggest union, actually went to the USV after the strike and they were like, okay, we need to talk. And they announced that they made what is an historical, from an industrial point of view, an historical agreement. And they endorsed this next strike together.
Yeah, wow, that's just incredible. And is the plan to also basically shut the country down again tomorrow? Is that what's happening?
Yes, absolutely. Awesome. The message still very simple, and it's blockiamo tutto, block everything. But what's interesting as well, I didn't mention it, it's that from the general strike, so that happened on the Monday, and until tomorrow, which is the next general strike, so a couple of weeks in between, it was called what it's called sort of like a state of permanent mobilizing. So high schools and universities started getting occupied. Workplaces were like on strike. The ports were permanently blocked and still are. There were spontaneous rallies and actions. They called what is 100 squares for Gaza. So they established a permanent blockade and occupation of like one square in 100 cities, and that was going to be it's effectively the coordinating center for all the actions in every city, and the squares were symbolically renamed Square Gaza, Piazza Gaza. So yes, the general strike shut the country down, and tomorrow the plan is to do it again with even bigger numbers. But in between, the civil society, students and workers didn't stop the disruption.
Yeah, so Massimo, I kind of want to ask, the next kind of question I want to ask is going a bit on, I guess, some of the background to politics in Italy, because probably one of the things that has kind of shocked people internationally has been, you know, the fact that this has been one of the few kind of examples of a general strike in a Western country, like workers actually taking very direct action in solidarity with Palestine. And it's actually something, obviously, that we would like to see everywhere. I mean, not just in Italy. We would obviously love to see a similar kind of action happening in Australia, the United States and Britain and so on. But of course, one of the things that sort of shocked people is obviously the fact that, you know, the Italian government is the furthest thing from being a left-wing government. In fact, it's quite a right-wing government, even described as, I guess, far right. I guess I want to kind of hear your comments a bit on some of the background of politics in Italy leading up to to these strikes.
Yeah, you made a good point in the sense that Italy has a fascist government. Let's say, and I think for many years we thought that was a sign of the Italian people sort of resigning to this new politics and not having really like a say, and we saw that there was. We lost a bit of a grip when it comes to mobilizing. And we were very, very dark when this government was elected. But what happened through the years is that, once again, where the far right rises, resistance rises. And I think, if anything, this government really made it possible to people to reactivate, for students to start mobilizing again, to workers start going on strike again, and what was really great, I think, it's that people realizing that what's happening in Palestine, it's a consequence of the same forces that are behind people getting poorer and poorer in Italy, money not getting spent in infrastructure, because we sign up deals with the United States to invest the 5% of our GDP into weapons. So I think politically that we've been a bit asleep, and this new government, this rise of the far right, and this latest reiteration of the genocide in Palestine. I think we're all catalysts to get people around politics again, and to realize that they actually have a say. And this is the main thing as well. We too often think that no matter what we do, nothing is going to change, that not enough people are going to be around. But organizing showed us that you can shut down a country that is run by a fascist government after many, many years of very little mobilization. These numbers in the street, in Italy, were seen probably the last time in the early 2000s when we were protesting the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. I think organizing definitely it's the key, and organizing in a way that unites workers, students, civil society. This general strike wasn't something that happened because one night people were like, oh, we had enough. Yes, there was a little bit of that, but there was work behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Murray. It's just, it's been so lovely to speak with you, and it's such a, I feel like a sense of hope as well. Like, I think it's examples like this of just, yeah, in the face of a pretty, you know, pretty far right government context, and, you know, maybe, yeah, a long time being inactive, that, you know, people can rise up again and can come together and can, defend human rights and fight for what's important. So thank you so much for joining us. Did you have any final comments?
No, thanks for having me. And I think let's keep looking what's happening in Italy, and it's going to be interesting because, unfortunately, we saw what happened with the flotilla yesterday. But the mobilization doesn't stop. And I think if anything, if there's one takeaway that I want to share with you all, it's what I mentioned before. Organizing together, putting aside differences for a bigger goal in for one action or more action or a mobilization, it's important, and we need to work together, students, radical radios, community radios, workers, activists, civil society, because it can be done. So I think why not here too?
Why not? Yeah, thank you so much, Massimo. Have a fabulous day. And did you want to just plug your radio show as well? Because I might have to have a listen now.
Radio Phyllis on 3CR, 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. every Wednesday. Even if you don't speak Italian, you can tune in because you'll have a good understanding of what we're discussing. If you can make it on Wednesday, we are also on the website. 3cr.org.au, I think.
Yep.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, Massimo. Okay, so we're just speaking to Massimo, who does the, what's the program called again?
Philef Radio.
Which stands for, again?
The Federation of Italian Migrant Workers and Their Families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can listen to their program, I think, every Wednesday.
6:30 till 7:30.
Every Wednesday evening, 6:30 to 7:30. And very much it gives a voice to radical and alternative views from the Italian community, both locally in Italy and internationally. All right, so I'll just go play a quick few announcements. Maybe we could play a quick song and then we'll go on to our... the activist calendar, and then our third and final interview for the program.
Sounds good.
This deal really accentuates and is very complementary to the white Australia domestic policy. Here you have not only a white alliance, but an Anglo-Saxon alliance of the ultimate cultural allies of the United States banding together, and the significance that it is aimed at colored peoples, at Asian peoples, at Pacific peoples. This is injecting a horrible racial dimension to this conflict. So I think the US and Australian elites' racist military policies are complementing the increasingly racist domestic policies. So I think, therefore, we really have to look out very, very carefully at this very dangerous synergy between racism on the military front and racism on the domestic front.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music, and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And I thought I'd just go play another song. I'll play Used to Be by Beach House. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. So now it is time for the Green Left activist.
Some more music, apparently.
Yeah, sorry about that. We're now on, it's time for the Green Left Activist Calendar, kind of highlighting some of the upcoming protests and left-wing events that are happening in Melbourne.
Da, 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 da.
So the first event, I guess, I wanted to kind of highlight is there's going to be a rally, a Free Palestine rally in Eltham, of all places. It's going to be at 11:30 a.m. at the Eltham Town Square in Arthur Street in Eltham. Then there'll be a number of different kind of events, including a dinner, International Solidarity to Defeat Imperialism, at 6 p.m. at the Brunswick Neighbourhood House. Then on Sunday, October the 5th, there's going to be an important rally, Free Palestine, Sanction Israel Now. And I think, you know, in the context of everything that's sort of happening around the Freedom Flotilla, I think it would be a very important event to get along to. On Tuesday, October the 7th, there is going to be a vigil honouring the victims of the Gaza genocide, and that'll be happening at 5 p.m. at the MP Pavilion at Queen Victoria Gardens, St Kilda Road in the city. And I guess, I mean, I think this will be a very important event to go to because, you know, I guess to add a bit of context, I mean, October 7 will mark, at least this year, will mark 2 years since the beginning of the genocide in Israel's genocide in Gaza. And I guess, I mean, the thing is, I mean, as Palestine solidarity activists, it didn't just begin on October 7. But I think it's an important kind of date to kind of commemorate, especially since we're going to be seeing on October 7, we're going to be seeing a lot of this kind of propaganda from the Western governments, this kind of Zionist propaganda that will attempt to kind of, you know, go on about the kind of terror, the victims of October 7, and, you know, especially the attack in Israel that happened on October 7. There'll be all this sort of, you know, lionizing about that and a complete kind of devaluing of Palestinian life. And so I think it'll be really important.
Yeah.
And then the next kind of important protest will be on Sunday, October the 12th. And now this, we're trying to build this as a big kind of nationwide march for Palestine.
Yeah.
Like, we basically want to get as many people there as possible. So I think that will actually be a very important kind of event. And then on Sunday, October the 19th, there'll be a rally, No Room for Racism and Fascism, No White Australia, Counter the Far Right, and that'll be happening at 11 a.m. at the State Library on Sunday, October the 19th. And then just the last kind of event I kind of want to highlight is on October 18th, Saturday, October 18th, Socialist Alliance will be hosting a seminar on the relevance of Marxism today. They'll be going from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Maritime Union of Australia, 46 to 54 Island Street in West Melbourne. And you can get more information on that event on the Green Left website. Now, just the other event to highlight is the rally for equal pay on Thursday, October 23. You want to talk about that?
You beat me to that. Yeah, but of course we interviewed Ange Carr earlier in the show. So that event is Thursday, October 23rd, and it's a rally to protect equal pay for community services sector, and that will be held at 12 p.m. at the State Library. So please get along to that if you're able to.
All right, so we'll just go play a quick few announcements. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
On Sunday the 19th of October, Be True Geelong will be hosting a rally to stand against hate and racism at Transvaal Square from 11am to 1pm. Come along and listen to community leaders and First Nation elders and join us for a march and yarning circle. After that, join us at 6pm at the Geelong Platform Arts for our second screening of Our Warrior, the story of Robbie Thorpe. Follow us on Facebook at Be True Geelong for more information. Be True Geelong is a proud 3CR supporter. MC
Mooks. Black Folly Entertainment.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. So we are very happy to be joined today by May Saif, who is a Palestinian activist based in Melbourne, who plays a big role in organising the kind of weekly kind of protests. And, you know, being one of the most outspoken sort of Palestinian voices, you know, who's always been who's always been there on the front line. So good morning, May.
Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We want to talk with you because obviously there's been obviously this big kind of announcement that's kind of being put forward in the Western kind of media, essentially kind of Trump's so-called kind of deal of the century. Basically, it's Trump's quote-unquote kind of plan to kind of bring peace to Gaza and to kind of genocide, which is what it's kind of been sold as. And I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of comments on this so-called quote-unquote peace plan. And obviously I put it in quotes because everything that we've kind of read about this plan indicates that it is not good at all for Palestinian self-determination, and is actually a very terrible deal that is kind of being put forward to the kind of Palestinians. So I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of comments.
Yeah, it's funny that we're calling it the deal of the century, like we're a backwater real estate agent or like a gummy car salesman. I think it's safe to say that it has nothing to do with Palestinian self-determination or ideas of identity or what our aspirations are. This is more of an example of land grabbing and sidelining Palestinian voices, whether it's in the conversation or a narrative or just simply seizing our land further by trying to sell us some big story. I don't think there is one Palestinian would take this offer seriously, supposedly. You know, we had the experiences of the Oslo Accord that, instead of bringing peace, brought forth further entrenchment and theft of Palestinian land, a system of apartheid, and the mass incarceration and oppression of Palestinian people. We're very familiar when the West try to offer us deals. They're never in good faith, and I wouldn't expect it from Trump either. But it is interesting, the title and the language that's being used to sell this to us.
Yeah, and I guess probably one of the other comments to kind of add as well is, I mean, I guess one of the more tragic kind of contexts for in which this kind of deal is being pushed onto the Palestinians, especially in Gaza, is that obviously, I mean, we're going through 2 years of a very kind of terrible genocide that has been unleashed on the Palestinians, and there's kind of like no sign of it kind of stopping. And I guess one of the kind of terrible things that's obviously been kind of that's obviously in the context of this deal is that there's obviously going to be a lot of pressure on the Palestinians to accept this. And of course, Palestinians in Gaza will feel the need that they have to accept it to see an end to the killing. But I guess, I mean, one of the biggest problems I see with this deal is there's actually no guarantees in this deal that Israel will actually stop its genocide. And in fact, actually, a lot of the conditions of the deal essentially mean that the Palestinians actually give up things.
I'd like to highlight the point that America is funding this genocide. It is wholly complicit in this genocide. And while they're killing innocent civilians, completely razing Gaza to the ground, making life completely unsustainable, forcing people into mass displacement time and time again, they've made it life completely untenable. America has been hand-in-hand with Israel in this genocide. And, of course, they're not going to offer any guarantees for Palestinian life or the end of the genocide. They're funding it. They're part of that machine. They are that machine. So I think it's quite interesting that we have these offers put to us, but it's been consistently the case where the expectation is on Palestinians to compromise their homes, their land, their dignity, yet there has been no measures put to the Israeli state. They are that power in the region. They are funded and backed by the American government and elite. And no question has been asked around what Israel is going to do. When are they going to stop this genocide? When is America going to stop funding them? When are they going to be tried as war criminals? No questions, no compromises, no pressure at all has been put to the Israelis at any point. And this has been a long history that Palestinians have had to deal with, where the question is, we must compromise everything and they must take everything from us. This just is in the same vein of what we've faced in the last 40, 50, 60 years. Except it's even more morbid because we're experiencing a genocide and the very sanctity of Palestinian life is not even a question. We're completely dehumanised in this equation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the most horrible kind of dehumanisations that I think is sort of part of this kind of deal is, and I think one of the interesting things is we are seeing more mainstream figures actually point out the kind of double standard in this, like people like Chris Sidoti, who I just watched a bit of a clip of his press club that he did recently. And I guess one of the kind of points that he kind of points out, now I don't agree completely with his sort of formulation around this, but of course one of the terrible sort of the kind of impositions that's been put on this deal is that it's very much essentially demanding that Hamas, which is very much in some sense the recognised Palestinian sort of resistance group in Gaza, to essentially demilitarise and lay down all its arms. But as has been kind of pointed out by people like Chris Sidoti, why isn't this same standard being applied to Israel? Why isn't Israel been asked to demilitarize, to lay down its arms, because it's been clearly being shown for the past 2 years, or even since the occupation, that it has no decency or no moral high ground to stand on when it comes to having arms. I want to kind of hear your comments about this kind of ridiculous sort of double standard that's been imposed on the Palestinians.
Well, I think it's been really important to understand the way the Israeli state has funded Hamas. You know, Netanyahu is on record of talking about funding and destabilizing the Palestinian narrative, or I guess representation, in propping up Hamas to ensure that they don't have to speak to the PLO, because they don't want to see a Palestinian state. They want to see a complete continuation of the Greater Israel Project and the apartheid regime dominating over Palestinians. I think it's really interesting that we actually need to understand that dynamic. Israel does not want two states. Israel does not want one state with Palestinians. They want Palestinians out. They want them either dead or out. They don't want them in their own ancestral home. And that's just, you know, the Israeli state, Netanyahu and his cabinet have been very vocal about this. This is not something that is wild. This is on public record. And so using Hamas as, I think, a political guinea pig, to be frank, Palestinians have lots of different types of political representation, yet we're focusing on Hamas because Hamas is the boogeyman for Israel. Rather than the reality is that Israel is the militarily dominating power in the region. They control everything. They know exactly how many people, where they live. Palestinians are the most, monitored of any population in the world. They know exactly where we are. They know exactly where we live. They know exactly how much we eat. We're under constant surveillance. So nothing happens without Israel really knowing. And the question will be is, why are we not having genuine conversations around peace? And why are we not having Israel held to account for its violence? But I'd love to know, you know, when the Americans and the Western powers are going to say that this is enough, that this is not in our political, economic interest to fund such a ethno-supremacist, violent, genocidal state. Because, you know, Israel has shown its underbelly, and the Western powers are very happy to continue along with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the kind of next and last question I kind of wanted to ask is, you know, May, from like a Palestinian perspective, you know, what would actually real peace and justice look like in the face of this kind of genocide? And what would actually a real plan based on, you know, Palestinian self-determination actually kind of look like in contrast to what has been imposed? I mean, one of the most outrageous things that's coming out of this plan is the fact that it's that Tony Blair is being appointed as basically going to be the head of actually implementing this plan, and as also one of the third party that's meant to guarantee that this plan, so-called quote-unquote peace plan being implemented. You know, the same Tony Blair that's directly responsible for, you know, the thousands of lives lost in Iraq as a result of the war in Iraq that he openly supported and armed.
Well, I think it's quite telling. They've got Tony Blair, one of the war criminals of our century, I'm going to say, inflicting murdering over 500,000 Iraqis in an unjustified war. But, you know, for Palestinians, it's very simple. We believe in human rights. We believe in equality. We generally believe in, you know, the values of, you know, even though the Israel state is the first state in history to be created by the United Nations, it's not a natural state. It was created by powers and supplanted into our homeland. You know, we actually genuinely believe in equality and for everyone. And so it would actually require people's own dehumanization and racist narrative to start looking at Palestinians as human beings, that we can start talking about how do we create an idea for a state where everyone is equal. I don't think, you know, speak to most Palestinians and what they care about is living a life of peace without the threat of violence and persecution. So the very basis of seems to be a hard thing for most Western powers and those in power to understand, viewing another person as a human being with equality, having Palestinians actually talk about what they want. And so in this instance, quite a lot of Palestinians are very happy live in equality with those not under the current Israeli regime or state, but a complete dismantling of it where everyone can live there in peace and equality. The right of return. There are millions of Palestinians around the world who've been denied their homeland. The questions that are actually going to be essential to what Palestinians believe and think. You know, Palestinians also have a right to resist against oppression. And so the question will be, if we do genuinely value international law, the actual fair application of it, I would say the trial at The Hague of war criminals, regardless of who that war criminal is, if you've committed a war crime, you need to be, you know, held to account for it. There's lots of things that we can do that actually fits within our current structures, you know, and values that we talk about in the West, yet we fail to actually uphold them. They seem to be mouthpieces to appear like we're doing something, but really it does not apply for Palestinians. So there's a few things actually we can do. Palestinians, I will say, and if you've heard of any of us who speak in the public space, you know, we are the victims of this oppression. We did not create it. It was brought upon us. And so, you know, the West and the media has always played a narrative of, presenting us as barbarians. Maybe let's have some truthful some very truthful representation within the media. There needs to be an accounting for the complicity of the West. But at the very least, let's talk about genuine peace, and that means equality for everyone. Sorry, I do have quite a lot of thoughts on this.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks, May, for that. I mean, I guess the last thing just to sort of add is, you know, just encouraging listeners why it's kind of important to attend the upcoming Palestine Solidarity protests coming up.
Yes, we have a national protest on the 12th of October. It will be held in every major city, from Naam to Gadigal to all around, even some regional towns as well. And it's in the same vein that we had on 24th of October. This is the 12th of October, really, is to be honest, talk about, present the 2 years of genocide that has occurred and the hopes of the Palestinian people and its supporters for an end to this mindless genocide, and a call for a ceasefire and a call for immediate sanctions on the state of Israel. This protest, particularly on the 12th of October at 12 p.m. State Library, for those of you in Naam, we're calling for sanctions. We're asking the Australian state to actually implement sanctions against the Israeli state. It's about time. We've been calling for sanctions for almost 2 years now, actively at every process, at every press, you know, statement we've released. It's time that the Australian state actually did something. And that means expelling the Israeli ambassador and applying immediate economic sanctions, our political sanctions, and military sanctions on the state of Israel.
All right. Well, thank you very much, May. And yeah, just I think the protest I think is going to be really important to attend. So yeah, thanks. Thanks again, May.
I will say there has been a lot of public support for it, and I don't know if people are looking in the streets of Melbourne, but we've had thousands of posters and flyers. I see them in different areas of suburbs of Melbourne. I think there's huge community support. I think that's really important to understand that. The support that we have for Palestine, it's not just on the outskirts of our society, it is every single regular people who come out supporting Palestine, and that's who we see at our protests.
All right. Thanks again, May, for being on our program, and thanks again for this great interview.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. So we're just speaking to May Saif, who is a longtime Palestinian activist, about, you know, the terrible kind of deal that is being imposed on the Palestinians. And I guess one thing to kind of add about this so-called peace deal that's being put forward by Trump is really what is basically imposing this deal on the Palestinians and basically saying you have to accept it or otherwise Israel is going to finish the job, i.e. yeah. Israel is going to continue its massacre of Palestinians, yeah. And continue its its genocide. So I think, you know, it's probably one of the most it's actually one of the more disgusting things that we've actually seen come out of this. And you know, it's also very neo-colonial in its nature, and the fact that it's quite shameful, I think, that all the governments have all welcomed it, including the Australian government. It's like basically, it's basically all these Western governments basically saying to themselves, "Oh yeah, we can, we've bought peace. Now we can wash our hands of the horrors that we've been complicit in."
Yeah, exactly. I was also just thinking, really, 8:29. I was just thinking really briefly as well that, like, Israel should be disarming for the good of everyone around them as well. It's not just the poor Palestinians. It's also Western Sahara. It's also Jordan, and there's just so many countries, Lebanon, there's so many countries around where they've been, you know, unleashing fire. So yeah, just the double standards are absolutely despicable. But we've had a really great show today, haven't we, Jacob? And we just want to encourage all our listeners to please support the Green Left radio show and Green Left paper at greenleft.org.au, and to also support 3CR Radical Radio.
Yeah, I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in, and stay tuned for Left After Breakfast.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support, or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions. Serve all masses.
Arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds and that crap.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.